Ontario brings to this panel a lovely lady with a well-earned reputation in AA. As office secretary for Toronto Intergroup for the past 17 years, as an active member of a fine group, there is no facet of this fellowship, local, national, or international, untouched by her. She has served us, and I say it simply, here in Ontario, with dedication, devotion, and with love. Step 7 belongs to her. I give you Marg M. of the North Toronto Group.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Hi. This is a very great privilege that falls to me this afternoon. May I qualify very briefly as an alcoholic? Many of you are familiar with the 20 questions, which is a set of tests used by Johns Hopkins Hospital as to whether one is an alcoholic or not. One of those questions says, do you crave a drink at a definite time daily? And my answer to that one was no. That may surprise you. But the answer was indeed no, because there wasn't any hour of the day or night at which I wouldn't take a drink, unless I was passed out. One slight other thing, in case you're still in doubt. I look pretty healthy today, after all, in comparison. If you were close enough to me this afternoon, you would see that, to the best of my ability, I have put my lipstick on quite carefully. Now, in my drinking days, it was different. Many a morning, I would have to put both hands down on my dressing table top, and I'd put the lipstick in my hand, I'd guide my arm like this, I'd go over to a wall, put my elbow against the wall, and then go, boom! Could I very quickly, before going into step 7, just refer to step 4, which we have heard covered so well this afternoon. Step 4 for me was a desperation move. It was made through sheer necessity because you had told me that if we skipped this vital step, there was a great chance that we would not overcome drinking. And I had to overcome drinking. I was desperate. And so the law of self-preservation being uppermost, I did tackle step 4. I did tackle step 5, too. It wasn't easy. It never is for any of us. Step 6, yes, like cease. I took a look and I was very willing to have God remove all my defects of character because these were the things that were causing me to drink. So that was fine by me. I was willing. And then came step 7. And when I looked at it, I'd read through it many times, but when I looked at it with an eye of doing something about it, I thought, well, that sounds like a repetition sort of step 6. God knows I'm willing to have him remove my defects of character. And I thought maybe, I wouldn't bother too much with step 7. I might move along to step 8. That looked kind of interesting. There were some nice juicy resentments I could list there. However, I remembered that the wise and experienced members with some length of time under their belt in AA had suggested that the prudent member of AA was one who took each step to the best of his ability in the order that the steps were set down for us. And so, with that thought in mind, because I wanted to be someday a wise and prudent member of AA, I decided that I better do something about step 7. And how glad I am that I did try to do something about step 7. Because this was a step that proved to be a yardstick of what maturity I might have gained. And it gave evidence of what I had done in the way of spiritual progress. Because this was a step that demanded of me a thoughtful and a definite act of the will. An act of the will which involved my intellect to know and the use of my will to do, to act on my knowledge. And this was the step that permitted me to move out from myself and toward my fellow man and toward God. It was an act of cooperation with God's ever-present grace. And it proved to be the step that contained the nourishing ingredient of serenity. There are only 7 words in step 7. It's the shortest of the 12. Let's talk for a minute or two about some of the words in this step. The first word we come to is humbly. Humility? This is something we're said to attain 3 minutes after we're dead. And I was a little worried about that word. However, as I honestly faced myself and the chaos of my life, I was forced into one aspect of humility, a recognition of my own limitations. If I was the most and the greatest, as my alcoholic dreams would have me be, how was it that my life was such a shambles? And it would seem that even those talents that I had, in fact, been granted, had all been misused. For there again was the wreckage of my life staring me in the face. Who and what would help me? I knew that you, members of AA, would help me. And I knew that our program would help me. But there was something even more than both of those needed in my situation. And that something was the assistance of a power greater than myself. And this recognition was truth. I realized my dependence upon God. And this is another facet of humility. Then we come to the word ask. Now, asking involves talking. And when we talk with God, we call it praying. This word doesn't need to frighten us, because we are permitted to use the simple words of a child talking with his father. And that is exactly what we're doing. We are talking with our Father, our Creator. And then we come to a verb, remove. Well, now we all know what the verb remove means. However, as it is used in this step, I don't believe it means a reallocation. I don't think it means that the bundle of my shortcomings should be sent to Timbuktu. I think remove is used here in the sense that my shortcomings be supplanted by their opposite virtues. That I should be given faith for fear and tolerance for impatience and gratitude and wisdom instead of the corrosion of self-pity and resentment. And then we come to that final word, shortcomings. I know what my shortcomings are from step 4. I have just mentioned a few of them. The self-pity, the resentment, the fear, the intolerance, and many, many more. So I know what my shortcomings are. By step 7, I know that if I will allow these imperfections to remain or re-enter my life for any particular space of time, I not only jeopardize my physical sobriety, but I jeopardize sobriety in its wider definition. Because sobriety, as inebriety, is a matter which involves the body, the mind, and the spirit. And indeed, if I allow my imperfections to remain or re-enter my life, I stand a good chance, a very good chance, of never achieving my share of peace and happiness. And I want these things. These are part of being sober. Because contentment, by now, has become a very, very important factor in leading a useful and sober life. And so because of these things, I did take step 7. I humbly asked him to remove my shortcomings. Yes, I could have tried to ignore step 7. Indeed, I did try just at first. But had I done so, I would have been shortchanging myself as I did in my drinking days. And I would have been forgetting part of my responsibility of membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. AA, this life-restoring fellowship where you, all of you, by your words and your deeds, have taught me that life is not a cup to be drained, but a measure to be filled. Thank you.
You have just listened to a speech by a speaker whose experience in our fellowship has been so rich and varied that I think you will all agree that the fruits of her experience, strength, and hope are well worth listening to. Thank you very much indeed, Marg. Now, north of British Columbia lies the beautiful Yukon Territory, a land of romance, where men are men, women are beautiful blondes, and all dogs are police dogs. From White Horse and the White Horse Group comes their General Service Representative, who with his lovely wife has journeyed all the way here, not by dog team, but by trailer, to be with us and tell us about Step 8. He is able and he is a fine speaker. I am happy to present to you Len M. of the White Horse Group of White Horse, Yukon.
Thank you, Chairman Bill. He said I didn't come by a dog team, but Bill doesn't know that I had to go out twice here to look after him a few minutes ago. And the only reason I brought them down was because I thought Bill might be getting a little homesick and I might be able to take him out of this rat race of Toronto up to some normal living again, because Bill was born and raised in Whitehorse. It was quite a coincidence when I was asked to speak on this panel and this wonderful fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous to find out that Bill had been born and raised in Whitehorse. We had written several letters back and forth, but I didn't meet Bill. I've been here 2 weeks, and I didn't meet Bill till just before the meeting. And I'm like some of the rest of them, I didn't prepare any notes, because if I did, I'd forget them anyway. However, I was asked to speak on Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. First of all, I'd like to say a word of how I came into this program. I was first introduced in the beer parlor about Alcoholics Anonymous by two men I had previously worked with. One had been drunk for 6 years after being in AA for 8 years. The other had been in and out Slippers as we know them. He is dead today. The other fellow has came back and doing a wonderful job. But when I went in, after trying to drink wine for an eye-opener, and it wouldn't stay down, I figured I was finished because I didn't like anything in the morning but wine. I went to the beer parlor, and I met these two men. I had previously worked with them. They had both been fired, and I'd been fired. They said, "Why don't you join Alcoholics Anonymous, Len? You're a hell of a shape, you are." Well, I said, "I'm bad enough now, I know that, but I don't want to join them people because I'm a big enough drunk as it is." This is all I knew about AA, to be honest with you. But that evening, they both escorted me to the hospital in New Westminster, where I stayed for 16 days. During that time, I was introduced to this wonderful fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Believe me, I didn't want any part of it, because I didn't need it. The guys in the other beds needed it, but not Len. And I thought, when I got out of there, that I would just stop on my own. But during my short stay in there, I had been left some literature by my sponsor, who I'm very sorry isn't here today. He couldn't make it. And I used to put this literature under the sheets or behind my knees, and curious to know what was in these books so that I could maybe get something to keep me sober, because I desperately wanted this. But I still had in my mind that I could do it alone. I was taken out of there on the second day to a meeting in terrible shape and asked to speak. And I think I'm shaking a little today from that first time. But they apologized afterwards because the chairman, who worked in the same plant that I did, I hadn't seen for 8 months, and I guess he thought I had been in for some time, and he asked me to speak. What a terrible experience this was for me. However, I went along in Alcoholics Anonymous for 2.5 years, sober and happy, or should I say dry, is a better word for it. My wife was happy, so was everyone that knew me. But I never went any farther. I'm like I've heard some of the previous speakers say, they didn't know anything about the steps. I knew nothing about the steps except step one. And I never went any farther. And I found myself one night after a meeting in Prince George, British Columbia, in a terrible state of affairs, right after I'd come out of a meeting in my apartment where I was staying for 3 weeks on a selling expedition for a company. And I didn't know what was wrong. I phoned some members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they called me, took me over to their house and explained the steps to me and what they were and how I was supposed to work at them. And from that night on, I decided that I had only accepted step one, and I had gone no farther in this program, which I hadn't. And I have found out that you only get from this program what we put into it. And that if I was going to stay sober and stay happy, I'd have to go into the steps as I come along to them. Also, I had to accept the fact that this is a spiritual program. Because if we threw away step one, or all the rest, I should say all the rest of the steps, and only accepted step one, we wouldn't have a program, because the other 11 are all spiritual as far as I'm concerned. So when I was asked to speak on step eight, I can't tell you too much about it. But first of all, I'd like to say that I didn't make any notes, as I said before. First of all, I'd like to tell you about myself a little. I don't know anything about these steps for this reason. I was always one of these guys that knew it all. I've done, I think, every job that there is for a human being to do, pretty near. I've turned my hand at anything. I will say I was fairly good at most of them. When I wasn't drinking too much, I never got fired. I could always manage to do a job, even though I never drove a truck or a cat or a bulldozer or anything else in my life. I could say, yes, I can do it, and I done it. Now, this is why I never learned anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, I guess, in 2.5 years. Because I figured if I quit drinking, everything else would come natural. That's all I had to do, was just dry up. And for me, it didn't work. That's why I found myself in this state of affairs after 2.5 years. I was always afraid, and I'm still afraid today, to know all about this program. I really am, to be honest with you. Because any other time in my life that I got to know the particular job that I was set out to do, and then I knew it all, and I started to tell everybody else how to do it. And this is why I'm afraid to know all about Alcoholics Anonymous, because if I knew it all, there'd be nothing for me to learn anymore, and I would possibly go out and get drunk. This way, in the last 2.5 years that I've been at Alcoholics Anonymous, I've learned more than I ever did in the 4 years previous to that. So when I was asked to speak on step 8, it was quite a problem for me. But you know, these old alcoholics have a way of doing things. And I happened to be chairman for the last month in Whitehorse before I left. So every time, once a week, I would ask the members to speak on step 8. I don't know as I'll remember much of what they said, because I did do a little work on my own. However, step 8 made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. When I looked at that, I thought, well, there isn't enough paper or pencil in the country for me to write all the people I had harmed. When I first came into AA, I didn't think I'd harmed anyone. But looking back, after a few years, I had. I think step 8 became willing, pardon me, made a list. I didn't do this. I didn't sit down and write out a list. But in my mind, I knew who I had harmed. Of all the people we had harmed, and became willing. Now I think, as long as we're willing, is the main part of this step. We are willing to make amends when the time arises. And as I went along in AA, I became very humble. And I think humility comes before we can accept any of these problems and accept the fact that we have hurt other people. I think first we have to be humble. I know I do. And when I started to look back at the people I had harmed, I thought, well, I can't run all over the British Columbia and the Yukon and Alaska and apologize to these people. So I just sat back and waited. And believe me, in the 6.5 years that I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've run into a lot of these people. Some of them in our wonderful fellowship, others on the street, others in their homes. And I believe today that they realize that I am trying, a day at a time, to stay sober. And by doing this, I am making amends. And I think that is all we can do in Alcoholics Anonymous, is to try a day at a time. I know, for me, I have to work this program one day at a time. And it's been a great pleasure to be here before this wonderful audience. And we planned this trip for 3 years, the wife and I and our family. We got a long ways to go home again. I'm hoping to take Bill with us, but I think he's too certified to go back into the North Country. That's another place that's a challenge, and I think that's why I like Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope that I have the privilege of being here before all you wonderful people again in the next 5 years or whenever it comes up again. And thank you very much for listening.
I'm glad to say, at any rate, that Len isn't thinking of those words of the late Robert W. Service, "They're making my money diminish, I'm sick of the taste of champagne, thank God when I'm skinned to a finish, I'll hit for the Yukon again." I've always been proud of Whitehorse, but never more proud than this afternoon, for you can believe me, it is a pleasure to see that my old hometown can produce people like Len. Thank you very much, Len. The most easterly province of Canada is Newfoundland, a province justly famed for the hardy vigor of its citizens. Our next speaker has been an active member in every phase of AA for over 12 years. He has served his group as General Service Representative. He was host chairman at the Atlantic Assembly in 1959, is presently committee man for the Nova Scotia Newfoundland Assembly. He has attended every international conference of AA, and he has enjoyed them all. I have found him a very inspiring member, and I know that you will too. The 12-step group of Corner Brook, Newfoundland, has sent us Cliff G. to speak to you on step 9. Cliff G.
My name is Cliff, and I'm an alcoholic. Somebody from Saskatchewan, I think it was, or Alberta, I'm not sure, asked me yesterday where Newfoundland was. So I said, do you mean to tell me Joey hasn't visited you yet? Because he's visited everybody else. Anyway, I would like to extend greetings from Newfoundland. I would also like to thank everybody up here for showing us a lovely, lovely time. And also, I would like to say something to my friends in Quebec. Mesdames et messieurs, je suis heureux d'être parmi vous aujourd'hui et de voir la place de vous rencontrer ici à la convention des AA. Step 9. May direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I think this step, the essential qualities that I used, at least, when I took this step, I had to show kindness, which a few years before I didn't. I also had to have tolerance, which was very, very hard for me. And faith, which I had shirked for some 19 years, and also, I think, a diligence. I would like to say here a little something I read a little while ago, which has also given me a lot of thought, caused me to think an awful lot. A definition of alcoholism is a search for holiness. I would like you to think about that, and maybe I think you will come up and say that is true. Because I think you know that we are really searching for a holier and a cleaner and a nicer way of life to live than we were living. I think this here ninth step has to do with the harm we inflicted on others while in the throes of alcohol or insane. In preparing for this step, I think the step is in, the work is in the preceding steps. And making the direct amends is, I think, equivalent to all the other steps. The first, I think, amend that we should make is to ourselves, personally. Because I think a lot of us whip ourselves too much when we make a little mistake. And so I don't think that we should use coercion as regards to ourselves personally. Our families, this was a stickler for me, because I had done untold damage to my family as a whole. I guess my mother, I imagine, was the worst one that I hurt. So this was, along in AA, this was troubling me. I never tackled this part of the program for probably 3 years until I attended a convention in Halifax. And there was an old friend of mine there, and I approached him on this point. So he relieved my worry somewhat when he said, "Cliff, when your mother looks through the window and sees you walk down the street, she is repaid for all the hurt you caused her." The close friends, this here takes a little doing. But I think if we should take the lesser ones first, I think the road gets easier. The third, parties are our creditors and our business associates. Now, I think we have to be in a state of mind. We have to be in tune with God. We have to use this, I think, in our approach to our creditors, because, we are going to meet with rebuffs, and some of them are not going to receive us too well. This is the time, I think, when we have to stand on our feet and we have to show that we are sincere and honest about what we're trying to do. The fourth, the deceased, the ones we harmed and they have already passed on, I don't think we can do too much about them. We can, of course, ask our higher power to please intercede there and sort of fix things up for us. We only have 24 hours of our life because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So if any of us out there have any amends to make, I think possibly it would be a wise thing to do them. There is not much more I have to say on this step. The only thing is, I would like to say, if we are in doubt, we can always ask the higher power. This is where I have received a wonderful amount of help. A word, too, to the people who have thoroughly followed this program, have never failed. I thank you very much.
Newfoundland may well be proud of Cliff G. He has done a great job. Thank you very much, Cliff. Montreal is, or was until the last few years, depending on whether you are from Toronto or Montreal, the most metropolitan city in Canada. The groups there are nearly all bilingual, as indeed they should be, and the enthusiasm and the fervor of the members of AA in that great province show the effect and enthusiasm of their Gaelic background. Our speaker, who speaks on Step 10, is a worthy and fine member of the Mundy Central Group of Montreal. I introduce Rowan C.
I suppose that last gesture of mine of raising a glass to my lips is sort of typical of Montreal in the eyes of the rest of the country. But nevertheless, je suis... Mes chers amis, je suis Ron C. et je suis un alcoolique. Et Cliff, je vous remercie pour vos sentiments beaux adressés aux les AA de Québec. Merci beaucoup. Chairman Bill and friends, it's a very great privilege to be here today to speak to you. Speaking in a sense, for AA in Quebec. And the reason I use the other one of our mother tongues there is simply this, that as some of you, but not all of you, know, I come from a province where the great majority of members of AA conduct their meetings and their thinking in the French tongue. And they consider and contemplate and practice les deux étapes or the 12 steps in that tongue. And I think that fact has to be recognized. In Montreal alone, we have, I think, in the metropolitan area, close to 200 groups. And over 60% of those groups conduct their meetings in French. But this meeting is entitled AA in Canada. And believe me, the spirit is the same in AA in Quebec, whether it's in French or English, as it is in every part of the world. As I say, I'm very grateful to be here today. Chairman Bill has been so scrupulously impartial and so highly complimentary to all of us, that to our provinces, that really none of us can take exception. I suggest that when this is all over, he's had many justifiable recognitions of his merit already. I think we should nominate him as a member of the Canadian Tourist Bureau. Step 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And when we were fighting to death, promptly admitted too, which is precisely the state in which I find myself right now. Believe me, I think I suspect I share this experience today with some of the other members of the panel, that when I found to my consternation that I had been nominated to speak on a step, any one of the steps, and to consider the philosophy contained therein, it was the first real opportunity in some years that I had given myself. I'm not going to say that I had, but I had given myself to consider this whole wonderful program of the 12 steps. You know, working in relative geographical isolation on one step, I found it difficult to consider just a philosophical consideration of this step without relating it to my own sometimes nutty behavior in the past. And as I've been sitting here hearing these wonderful expositions of the other steps, I realize what a totality this program is. That's 12 steps. It's not one particular step. I don't know that I've practiced these steps to the best of my ability. I'm very much aware that what Margaret said, Margaret M. from Toronto said, I have not done. I have not taken them in proper sequence. But we've heard them in that sequence today. And I feel that we all agree that step 10 is slightly different from the other nine which we've heard discussed, because, as it were, we're coming out of the woods. And this step has what I think is a heap of living in it, because it's a step designed for day-to-day living in this program. You know, I must admit again, in all humility, that I was just a wee bit crestfallen when I told that I'd drawn step 10. I can't for a minute imagine what I was expecting to do. But I'd always regarded step 10 as one of those steps, you know, as I heard somebody read them, and he said very quietly, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Because I think that over the years, I've perhaps lulled myself into the feeling that, well, I'm doing that anyway, you know. Heck, I'm staying sober, I'm going to meetings, I'm trying to carry the message in a disorganized sort of way. I'm living the program. But that's not so, and I think this step is a terrific challenge to all of us. We've gone through the, if you'll pardon me coining a phrase, the sort of recovery steps from 1 to 9. And I certainly doff my hat to the members who have discussed them, because they, even the discussion of them is a terrific challenge. And to live them is an even greater one. And now we have been launched, as it were, by our wonderful program into the world in which we have now got to learn to live. In common with all the alcoholics in this room, I was once a part of that world, and then because of certain aberrations which took place in my behavior, I discovered that I was no longer a resident of the normal world. And then, by the grace of God, someone came to me with the message I wasn't too successful at the outset because I was loaded with all the prejudices that the human frame can be loaded with, or the human mind can be loaded with, and I refused to accept this program for a matter of about 3 years. But eventually, the wonderful example that working members of AA provide to the suffering newcomer had its effect on me, and I accepted the fact that I was totally and completely defeated, and these people who had already recovered in the program had life itself to offer to me. And praise God, I reached out with a trembling hand and I grasped theirs. This step is certainly an action step. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I've said it's a challenge because it's a challenge to our alcoholic personalities, certainly to mine. In the first place, I still haven't really learned the lesson of continued application. But that's what this step requires of me, that I shall continue to take personal inventory, that I shall make this a daily program of my own. Now, I know there are various distinctions between how we do this. There are two real main ones. We do it every minute of the day as we go along. And who is there to deny that it's the most rewarding experience that we can have in the course of the day? Because we have come out of these recovery steps into this so-called normal world. And in my humble opinion, we've dragged along with us those character defects which have plagued us, which have brought us to ruin, and which this program has taught us to learn to control. That's the insurance policy aspect of this step, if we continue to take personal inventory. And this personal stuff, now, in common with all alcoholics, I'm a highly egotistical person. And most things which affected me personally interested me greatly when I was drinking. They interested me either from the point of view of enjoyment or very adversely. But now I'm asked to continue to examine myself in a mirror which, in a sense, has been wiped clean. I used to look in the mirror in the old bad old drinking days, and I didn't like what I saw. And frankly, I'm none too sure some days that I like everything that I see in it today. But the point is that I now have an opportunity to do that. And I have an opportunity to examine myself. I was a great one for exercising that privilege which we alcoholics think we used to have when we were drinking and taking everybody else's personal inventory. And once in a while, I find myself slipping into that old character defect again. And I think I share that experience with many of you in this room, too. And to continue with the step. And when we were wrong, I had a rather starry-eyed vision of AA after I'd sobered up for a while. I really thought that the world was going to be pie in the sky all the time. It took me some time to realize, frankly, that my character defects would not disappear. That, as I've said, I would still have them with me, but I would have to control them. And I have discovered many, many times that I have been wrong. It's not necessarily a mental exercise, it's a spiritual exercise in which I have to indulge. All of us are wrong from time to time. All of us must face the fact. Anger, frustration, jealousy, envy, all of them enter into our minds. And none of them, I respectfully suggest, are justified insofar as the alcoholic is concerned. We talk about justifiable anger if someone does us wrong and so on. But I think our natures are too precarious or delicate to stand the strain of that, and we have to accept the fact that these things happen. And we have to continue to practice the program to continue to gain strength from it. And this business of promptly, well, Whit Hilmer, sitting down here in the front row, publicly addressed me as procrastinator number one today. And I wasn't as upset as you might think I was, because I figured when I came into this room, I'd run into some pretty stiff competition. But the point is that that's one of the aspects of our character we have to fight against all the time. Now, my time has run out. I earnestly suggest that we help each other, we help ourselves as personalities, by continuing to practice this step all the time. It's our insurance policy for survival in this world and in this wonderful program. Thank you very much.
Well done, Roan C. This is a great talk on Step 10, and we are much obliged to you. Any of you here in this audience who have visited the fine prairie province of Manitoba will recall with pleasure the great metropolis of Winnipeg. Winnipeg is famous for many distinguished qualities as a city, not the least of which is the power and the growth of Alcoholics Anonymous in their midst. That AA is strong in Manitoba is due to men of the impressive eloquence and skill of members like our next speaker, who will speak to you on Step 11. I am happy to present to you a member of the Tiger Group of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Tom G.
My name is Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. And I say that I'm an alcoholic because I believe that I am one of those who suffer from the disease of alcoholism. And I recall on one other occasion, and I feel a little bit like that today, when I was asked to attend a little AA function to speak about the disease of alcoholism, and I think that day I was number 14 on the program. There were, I think, seven quartets and two harmonica bands, and the guy who spoke immediately before me was the local doctor, and he said, "I want to disabuse you people who may be here of the idea that alcoholism is a disease." And that's a real introduction, let me tell you. But I've just been sitting here wondering what on earth I'm going to talk about. And I decided there are two kind of speakers who were up here today. There was those who had notes and used them, and there was those who didn't have any notes. And I'm sort of the third kind. I got notes, but I can't use them. Because it's all been said before, and I'm sure very much better than I might have been able to say. However, I would like to talk to you just for a couple of minutes about Step 11. Because I think it is such a fabulous step. It says that we sought, through prayer and meditation, to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Now, it's a long step, and there's a lot of meaning in it, and it takes time to get around to it, as we've seen, because we've had 10 wonderful talks before this one. To me, it is sort of the living part of the program. If you like, for me, it is the step in which we come home. It is the unity of our program. I am one of those who has a program which has 24 items in it. It is made up of 12 steps and 12 traditions. And I have to use them all. And I can't get by on the 12 steps without the 12 traditions. And I was just sitting here watching all the people, and I want to thank my friend Ceaseless Cecil from Saskatchewan for the nice plug he gave me. This is very unusual, let me tell you. When he's talking to me in private, it goes quite differently, I can assure you. And he knows a lot about humility when he's talking to me. I can tell you that, too. getting down to the business of living, in getting down to the acceptance of life, it seems to me that this is where we eventually come home to ourselves. As I was saying, I was just sitting here watching all the people. And they're coming and they're going. And you know, I don't know where they're going. And sometimes I wonder if we really do. Because I have the feeling that when I get to step 11, I'm not going anywhere. I'm all through going. And the reason is very simple. I'm not going anywhere because I'm already there. This is exactly where I'm supposed to be. So it is for that reason that I call it the coming home step. Coming home to life. Coming home to me. It's a matter of practicing all of those things which we have acquired in the earlier steps, of applying them to my life. And this is the thing that I always failed to do before I got here. I couldn't do this. And now I don't have to worry about that at all. Because the realization through the practice of this step on a daily basis comes to me that I'm powerless. That I'm powerless. And the book tells me that there is one who has all power, and that one is God. And after it gets through admonishing us to clear up the wreckage of our past, the thing that I've heard Dave talk about so eloquently, then it goes on to say, abandon yourself to God as you understand Him. Your God for you, and my God for me, whatever that may be. Someone here earlier spoke about the desire of the alcoholic for a God of his own understanding. And I know about that. And I think it is certainly the driving force that brings us here. I think without that we wouldn't make it here. Whatever that is, and I can't define it, but it happened to me. And that is the thing that brought me here. Because I was one of those who had difficulty staying out of church, and I had difficulty staying out of the pub. And if you want to see a confused and unhappy individual, believe me, there's one. Terrible thing. During the last year of my drinking, I spent 4 visits to the hospital. And because I am a man who has a professional status, of course, they gave me the VIP treatment with the private room, and instead of locking me up with the rest of the nuts where I belong. But I have to tell you also, because I'm one of those macro snatchers, that I made 4 closed retreats during the course of that last year of my drinking. And I want to tell you now that they were not happy occasions. I never had such a session of being chewed up inside as I went through. And I recall the last one that I went on. I had the need of speaking to this spiritual advisor. And I called him into my room because I felt this was going to be too much for just an ordinary confessional to look after. And I guess that I had some of this lack of emotional control that my friend Johnny was talking about a few minutes ago. Because he took one look at me and he saw the tears running down my face, you know, and the shaking and the complete and utter insanity staring at him out of my eyes. And he left by the nearest exit, you know. And I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. So we finished the retreat real quick right there. I reached into my bag and I got out the answer. The only answer that I knew, you see. It was a problem, but it was the answer. Thank God, since that day, things have changed. And I've come home. To step 11,
and to you. And this is why I believe this is the unity step in our program. This is the thing that ties my life together with your life and gives it a real deep meaning, a spiritual meaning, if you will, a spiritual meaning. I think this happens through the medium of desire. And I think this is what it means in the words of the preamble when it says that as alcoholics we share our experience, strength, and hope. And I think the hope we share is the desire, because God knows without the desire there's no hope. This is how I feel about Step 11. I had a small resentment against Bill, which is all gone, because I only had 8.5 minutes to talk about Step 11, and we've got whole groups that do nothing else but discuss Step 11. And there are just so many things to say you couldn't begin to cover any part of it in 8.5 minutes. But you've been wonderful. You've been very patient. You're tremendous people. I hope that you're getting so much out of this thing, out of the whole convention. It's such a tremendous experience, I'm sure. It has been for me. To be able to sit here on a platform with all of these people from the whole width and breadth of this country, a tremendous thing, a wonderful thing. To have Bill here, what a great thrill. So to me, the whole thing has been an exemplification of this step, the whole thing. You know, I recall when I was a kid, building little houses out of little sticks and pieces of clay and sand. And how distressed I was, and how I would weep when someone destroyed them. And I think our lives are something like this. And I think someday when we are in another place, we will look down on our life something like that. And we will realize that what we have been given to do here are simply exercises. But I don't tell you that to discourage you, because I think it is so important that the exercises which we have to do, we do well. We do to the best of our ability one day at a time. One day at a time. But I think that it is important to remember that when night comes, I mean death, we must go back to the Father's house. We must return to our home. I want to thank you very much for waiting. I want to thank you very much for being here. God bless you.
Now you know what I mean by the source of the strength of our fellowship in the great city of Winnipeg. I can assure Tom that any time he wants to move to Ontario, we'll gladly take him. Thanks a lot. Almost surrounded by the gleaming blue of the great Atlantic Ocean, famed for her sailors and her seaports, Nova Scotia can lay claim to being the most maritime of all the provinces of Canada. Our next speaker is from that province and has had many years of happy sobriety in AA. He has served with distinction in almost every office in his local area and on the assembly level. He was GSR from the Atlantic Provinces Assembly in 62-63. He is a member of the Round Table Group of Halifax. He has been faithful and industrious, able and loyal. I present Jack M., who will deal with Step 12.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. There's a great deal to cover in the 12th step, and therefore I'm not going to take any time with preliminaries. I would like to say right off that this step to me has three dynamic properties. First of all, to me, it is the repository of all of the spiritual experiences that I have had since I came into this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which have led to a recognition of the ultimate purpose of life and the existence, the knowledge of the existence of a power beyond me, but which remains within my reach. It is a covenant between God and man. God has contrived the agency, the means, I should say, of sobriety, and the agency is this fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is the guardian of this day for each of the principles that it espouses as a link in the chain of my sobriety. Each of these 12 steps has been to me a spiritual experience. I can see no difference between the first and the rest of them. And every one of them has contributed to a gradual emergence from the spiritual morass in which I found myself when I came to this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was only one thing in my favor when I came here, that I had a desire to stop drinking. And when I arrived, I found that there were other things in my favor. That there was in this program an absence of dogma, a freedom from assertive opinion that might have chased me away. Because at that time I was not ready for Orthodox religion. I was afraid. I was prejudiced. I was unsure of myself. I wasn't ready. But I have been able to come in to this adventure into the life of the Spirit because AA has given me the spiritual freedom in its principles to investigate myself, to investigate the possibility of a higher power, and eventually to accept with certainty the fact of his existence. These 12 steps have provided me with the inner experiences that were necessary to effect a surrender to the reality of my alcoholism, to the reality of the life of the Spirit, and to arrive at a total conviction of the existence of God's love and the indisputable wisdom of accepting His will for me. This was a difficult chore to face. But here in AA, I found what has been happening this afternoon. The sharing of knowledge, the sharing of experience, all of it freely given to help another human being. I might say that paralleling all of these experiences, there was a growing awareness that I could not separate myself from any segment of humanity. That in God's eyes, homogeneous as society might be, all society is a single unit. And it was not until I looked in and looked up that I looked across and found the brother whom I must serve. I remember some years ago talking with Eve about three little lines that we both had read somewhere, which go like this. I sought my God eluded me. I sought my soul I could not see. I sought my brother, and there I found all three. And this has happened to me in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. What dedication I may have is a dedication of necessity, because I know fully well that I must not at any time set up myself as the criterion of another's eligibility for this program. And I know for certainty that but for the grace of God, I could be worse than the worst. I remember hearing watching and listening to a television program a few months ago, and Mr. Quazon Sackey of Ghana was being interviewed. And the interviewer asked him why he and his father had dedicated themselves so much to the service of their country. And his answer was, "Service is the rent we pay here on earth as guests." And I'd like to paraphrase that. And I feel that service is the rent that I pay while I am in Alcoholics Anonymous for my sobriety. I know that as a creature of our higher power, as one who expects his love, I have no right to deny the means of obtaining his love to anyone else. I realize, and I have said often, that I think that everyone who comes to this program deserves as many chances to become sober as he needs. Service is one of the ingredients of sobriety. But what of the practicing of these principles? I thought for some time that I was practicing these principles according to the way that they were written. And I thought for sure that I had turned my will and my life over to the care of God. I had gone through a very serious operation, or at least my wife had, and there were two occasions when I could easily have lost her in the operating table. The second occasion was shortly after I came to AA. And I had confidence that with prayer, she would come through. But just about 6 years ago, our daughter died. And in the moments before her death, I fought with God that he had no right to take her, that we were a compact family, a mother, a father, a son, and a daughter. And now she was being taken from us. And God struck back, but not in anger, but again in compassion. And in an instant, I knew the meaning of our third step, this principle of surrendering our will and our life into his care. And I knew that she was only on loan, that she was his to take back when he wanted her. And in the days that followed, he provided that blessed numbness. And in the years that have followed, when suddenly the loss becomes more acute, I know that there is a reason. And I am content that there is a reason for what he did. One of the most essential principles as far as I'm concerned, is the statement that I am an alcoholic. I will always be an alcoholic until the day I die. Coming out of this statement, and coming out of all of the other principles that are espoused by this 12th step, we know that never, and I repeat never, will God ask us to share more than we can bear. I can always remember the telephone call that I got from my brother when our daughter died. And he said, "Here you are sober. You're trying to live a decent life. Why should this happen to you?" And I said, "Maybe it should happen to me because he knows that I have something to back me up. He knows that I have a program in which I believe and which will give me all the strength that I need in the years to come." And I like the concept of this power beyond me, which is always within my reach. And I felt it one night in a motel room in Sydney. It had clouded over, and suddenly there was just one small round cloud in the sky. And the sun came down in shafts in a circle around it. And I was sitting in the window thinking, and suddenly I moved my arm, and my arm went into one of the shafts of sunlight. And up until then I had been feeling a little chilly in the room. And suddenly I felt this warmth. And I knew that there was a power there which would warm me just by reaching for it. And I am just as certain that the power of God's love is there when I need it. Thank you.